Chat with Traders, episode 25.
The biggest secret of the best traders in the world is that they're just like everyone else. However, they've worked hard to learn the markets and discover what works and what doesn't. But how can you hear about these journeys and get in on the strategies and tactics they use? You can do it by listening to Chat with Traders. Here's your host, Aaron Fifield.
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks so much for tuning in to episode 25 of the Chat with Traders podcast. It's great to have you tuned in. This week, I thought I'd change things up a little bit, and I'm actually going to reverse the interview. So instead of firing questions at the guests like I normally do, I'm going to be on the receiving end and giving the answers. If you've had the chance to listen to episode 1, then you may recall I gave a brief overview right at the beginning explaining where I was at with my trading. Well, things have gradually progressed since then, so I thought this would be a good milestone to update anyone who is curious to know. So to keep things interesting, I brought on Zach Hurwitz, who I'm sure you will remember from episode 11 of the podcast, and he'll be the one asking the questions. Zach's a great friend of mine and is continually guiding me along to becoming a better trader through regular coaching and mentoring, so I couldn't think of anyone better for the job. Plus, Zach also expands on many of my responses with additional insight. So all in all, I hope you find this episode to be valuable in its own unique way. And just before we get into it, if you have any questions or comments for either Zach or myself, just go to chatwithtraders.com/25, scroll to the bottom of the page and drop in a comment. Both Zach and I will be monitoring this very closely. So if you've got any feedback or responses, just feel free to share them there. All right, team, enjoy this interview and let's talk soon. Hey Zach, what's going on? Thanks again for appearing on the show for, I guess we could call it maybe round two.
Round one and a half. Aaron, it's always a pleasure, man. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're doing things a little bit differently this time. I'm going to be speaking for the most part, not entirely, but giving a little bit of insight about an update on sort of where I'm at with my trading and sort of what's been going on in my world. I mean, you've been pressuring me into doing this for a while, and I've had a bunch of emails come through from people just sort of asking me for an update because, I mean, I sort of made it pretty clear on where I was at with my trading in episode one right at the very beginning. I sort of rambled on there for a bit, and I just sort of haven't really updated anyone in the meantime. So I sort of thought this might be interesting, just change things up for a little bit. So...
Well, Aaron, you were missing an important trader in your first 25. You only gave people insight in episode 1. So, like myself, I came along episode 10, 11, et cetera. And I don't know, I kind of missed the backstory. So I had to Skype you and talk to you longer after the interview. We've developed quite the friendship.
Yeah, for sure. So you're going to be sort of firing a few questions my way. So I'm a little bit nervous to be on the other side of the other side of it now, but let's see how I hold up, eh?
Well, tell me, Aaron, how did you first discover trading? I mean, this is the question you always ask people to lead off with, so it's a natural start for you.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. So, I mean, I should probably go right back to the very beginning, and I'll try and not ramble too much. I'll try and keep it fairly brief, you know, just to bring us up to speed. So, I left school when I was about 15. I hated school. I couldn't wait to get out of there. And I left school and I moved into an apprenticeship. I don't know. Do you have apprenticeships in the States there?
I think it'd be more called like an internship, but apprenticeship feels a little more serious and arduous.
It was paid. So I was getting paid to do it. I was doing, you know, 38 hours a week. I think I was on, I'd be lucky if it was $5 an hour. On my first year as an apprenticeship. Kind of goes up each year. But anyway, I was doing an apprenticeship and that was in sort of graphic design. And anyway, did that. I was qualified by the time I was 19. It was a four-year apprenticeship. And on the side, I'd sort of started a side business, just doing a little bit of freelance design and that sort of thing. Just trying to make a little bit of extra money. I mean, I always sort of had a drive to... set myself up for the future, you know, I want it to be well off. I want it to be wealthy. I don't think there's any harm in saying that. You know, I didn't want to be struggling, you know, later on in my life. I want to, you know, not have to worry about money at some point. So I sort of felt like I had a long-term kind of vision. So I, you know, started a side job. I was pretty good with saving. I ended up buying an investment property when I was about 20 years old. And then from there, I was sort of like, okay, so I've got a property. You know, what else do you do? So there was like the next obvious choice was for me to take a look at the stock market. Like, I didn't know anything about the stock market or trading or investing and that sort of thing. Like, my family's not into it. None of my friends were into it. No one I worked with when I had the job. So, you know, I just sort of ended up going along to I just sort of jumped on Google, looked up some seminars that were going on in Brisbane where I'm at, and there was pretty much just signed up to one of the, there wasn't too many, and I just signed up to one that was coming up in the next few weeks. Went along, liked what I heard. Obviously, I was only probably about 21 at that point, and I don't think I was too hard to convince, but
anyway. Well, you know, there's a quick, I want to interject, there's an old saying about the stock market, if you want to make $1 million, you start with two, right?
Yeah, I've heard that one before, that's a good one.
So it's real estate or the stock market, but that's so impressive to hear at a young age. I know, as we often joke, while I'm still in my 20s, I'm going to say, we're both still 20-somethings, but I am continually impressed, man. As you said, you didn't have too much worry about the present. You had a lot of foresight for the future, even from an early age. I don't think many 20-year-olds are considering investment properties. I don't know how many 20-year-olds could spell investment property.
Yeah, I mean, that could have sort of had something to do with the fact that I left school when I was 15. I didn't see it all the way through and graduate. That I sort of had those few years experience working. I don't know. But anyway,
I hope this isn't broadcast to children out there who are going to drop out of school thinking that they can buy an investment. I'm just kidding, Aaron. You are maybe an exception to the rule, but a brilliant one. And I don't know, man, I've said this to you before. I'm glad we have you in the stock market now. You're a powerful mind, and you're helping a lot of other people with the podcast. So
thank you.
Keep going, be careful, you might give me a big head.
But so where was I? So, yeah, I signed up. And what I signed up for, I should be a bit more clear. So what I signed up for was, you know, essentially education on how to trade. And that education sort of involved, you know, a great big thick book, a couple of DVDs, and like weekend workshop. So it was about like 2 days long. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I went home, obviously got stuck into the book. I watched the DVDs. Like, I put in a fair amount of study. Like, I didn't bring it home and put it on the shelf and let it collect dust. I got stuck into it. It was actually really good. It sort of taught me how to, you know, chart technical analysis. Like, I was actually hand charting. So I spent at least probably the first 6 months before I brought a decent piece of like charting software, and I was actually just charting by hand. And I think that was a pretty valuable skill to have, to actually sort of understand like how to actually construct a chart without just mm-hmm. having the software do it all for you. Sure. You sort of like understand how these tools are actually working, what's going on. So, I was plotting, you know, just a pretty standard bar chart or candle chart, and mm-hmm. You know, with an indicator over top of it that I use occasionally. Anyway, the method that this company taught was the methods of William Gann, W.D. Gann. And for those who aren't familiar with him, he was sort of considered to be like an early, a Wall Street legend of the early 1900s. I think he passed away around 1950 sort of time. Don't quote me on that, though.
Sure.
And his methods were very, a lot of them were sort of based on ranges repeating and time repeating, and then fractions of those time and ranges. So I studied this his methods for probably about 2 years, maybe close to 3 years, pretty intensively. I also read a bunch of his books multiple times, so I got right into it. And anyway, I sort of, you know, by the time I hit 3 years, I was like, okay, well, I opened a $5,000 account like way back, you know, probably about 6 months after I started reading up on trading. And my account, it's gone up a little bit and then it's come down a little bit and it's just sort of floated around the opening balance. Like it hasn't moved too far. I haven't lost a great deal of money and I haven't made much money. So I was sort of like, you know, time's ticking by. I always sort of feel like there's an urgency and I was like, I need to change something. So what I'm doing just isn't working. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much how I got into trading. I don't know if I missed any parts out there.
No, this is good. I want to interject before we get to how the podcast started, because that's the question that's been on my mind. I'm sure everybody else's mind. How'd you arrive at this point? Before we move on, I want to ask about what appealed to you about GAN. I think most people find GAN more in the intermediate part of their trading career. It's interesting to hear somebody who learned about his methods early on in their trading career. Seems a bit daunting. Was it the, I don't want to say artistic balance maybe, but the you don't need to have too much technical understanding of the markets to appreciate maybe a fractal price pattern or an understanding of Fibonacci, to make an analogy, right?
Yeah, to be perfectly honest, I mean, that was just the first thing that I started learning about. So when I went along to the seminar that one time and I signed up for the education and that sort of thing, it was just, that's what they taught. And I just stuck with it. Like, I was always very conscious of not jumping around too much. I didn't want to sort of go from one educator to the other and just sort of spin my wheels. So I just kind of went deeper into that subject because I'd already started getting into it. I just went deeper into it, started learning more and more about him and his methods. And I kind of reached a point where it just seemed a little bit wishy-washy for my liking. I don't know if that's a good way to describe it, but like it was just a little bit open to interpretation, I think. And I'm not saying that it doesn't work. I'm not one to say any strategy or any particular way of trading doesn't work, because there's always people out there who it works for them, right? I'm just saying for me, I just wasn't really vibing with it too well. But in saying that, it did give me a good understanding of, you know, ranges, understanding market kind of moves and structure and that sort of thing, different periods like accumulation, distribution, you know, consolidation, all those sorts of different repeating ranges, all that sort of stuff. Like I learnt a lot from reading up on GAN, even if it's not how I directly trade today.
Yeah, I mean, that leads into all sorts of questions. Are you live trading now?
Yeah, so I started live trading probably since like about 6 months into after I started reading up on the stock market and started like educating myself. I didn't open a brokerage account and then decide to get educated. So I knew that I had no idea what I was doing. I got to get clued up before I put any money into this. So I took that approach. I sort of studied pretty hard for 6 months. And there was a little bit of paper trading in there. I didn't paper trade too much. It's for me, it wasn't really...
it's hard to have the gravitas of real money, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I sort of struggled with like treating it like real money, even though I'm like, oh, that's losing trade. That's annoying. But it's like you just don't fully get it. Even though recently I've been paper trading a new strategy, which I'm sure we'll get into a bit later, and I have found it very useful. But at the time, at the very beginning, I couldn't really find much value in it, to be honest. So I know it works for some early on. It didn't really work for me too early on. So anyway.
Well, it's like you had to build the experience to know what would be different and be cognizant of it. Early on, it just seems like I'm not getting something here, but I'm not able to put my finger on what it is that I'm lacking.
Yeah, totally. That's you pretty much hit the nail on the head. So, I've been trading. I opened a $5,000 account, and I'd been trading that sort of ever since. And recently, I haven't been taking many live trades. But again, I'm sure we'll get to that a little bit later.
It just sounds like you're in a development cycle. This is something that traders routinely go through. They go through activity cycles and development cycles. You know, sometimes it's best to bunker down, build the strategy, test it, as I know we're getting into more of the quantitative stuff. But it's a pendulum, and it swings back and forth and never ceases. Many traders think, I'm going to do a year of development, and I'm going to go make $1 million for the rest of my life. And I think it's that constant refining and honing of the process. A lot of lazy traders don't want to do, and it's no surprise why they don't succeed. I was actually going to point this out earlier when you're talking about your development on GAN, your research and understanding, building the bar charts manually. I hope all your listeners pick up on the thing you're really doing right is you're developing mastery of a specific subject before moving on. Even if that subject isn't going to be useful to you, or I should say profitable, it'll still be useful. Learning how to learn, learning how to evaluate, learning how to arrive at an actual conclusion instead of it forever being, well, that might be helpful, I'll hang on to it. You kind of need that finite, you know, nail it down kind of nature. And I think you've succeeded in that from what I've seen. So
I mean, I don't feel like I definitely can't say I mastered GAN, but there's definitely aspects of what I learnt from reading up on his material that mm-hmm. I still use. So I don't use like the full package, of course. It's my approach is much different now, but there are certain things which stick with me, you know.
I feel that same way about Elliott Wave. I always say I'm so glad I learned Elliott Wave, and I'm so glad I don't trade Elliott Wave. So I'm sure I'm going to inspire some anger from a few Elliotticians out there, but I apologize. To each their own. So does that bring us up to when you're starting the podcast, or are there a few more points we want to hit on?
Yeah, so, I mean, from there, that probably does lead into the podcast. So obviously I'm sort of like 3 years into this journey, and I'm not seeing huge success, and I'm not seeing massive failure either, unless you consider mm-hmm. not making money as failure, but at least I wasn't losing heaps. I never blew up any accounts, or touch wood, I haven't yet.
Yet. There are still many years in your trading career, my friend. And that's an okay thing, by the way. I'm not ragging on Aaron here, I'm giving him a hard time that he's going to blow up an account. The smartest thing, I think I may have mentioned this in my interview, I put the minimum in. So even when I did blow up an account, it's not the end of the world. It's the most modest loss that you can take. So good on you for being patient. I mean, that's another thing I'd pat you on the back for. Anyway, continue podcasting.
Yeah, so, I mean, my passion for trading sort of gradually got stronger, and I was just like, there's no point doing this half-assed. Like, if I want to actually make trade and make some serious money doing this, then I need to, you know, give it my full, well, not say full attention, but I need to give it the attention it deserves. So I was sort of like, just in like my circle, none of my friends were into trading. You know, none of my family was into it. I just didn't know any traders. I had no one who I could speak to about trading, who understood it. So there was, I felt like, I've used this analogy, you've probably heard this 10 times, Zach, when I've been speaking to others, but like, if you want to be a mechanic, right, you hang around with people who talk about cars, work on cars, fix cars, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a trader, yet I didn't know a single trader. So there was kind of a disconnect there, and I felt like that was partly my issue. Is I couldn't learn from anyone who was more experienced. Mm-hmm. So I've always been a fan of podcasts. I always listen to podcasts, and I was just like, you know, this would be really cool. I'd love to speak. It could be a really good platform that would allow me to speak with other traders. And, you know, I can ask them a bunch of questions. It was sort of a podcast that I was looking for, that I would like to listen to myself, but I couldn't really find one that sort of really grabbed my attention too much. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, well, you know, I'll create it myself. And I, you know, I have the graphic and web design knowledge, which I briefly mentioned earlier, to sort of, you know, put together a website, you know, just jumped online. If you want to learn anything, you know, you can just jump online these days, looked up how to set up a podcast and just read up on it, brought a bunch of equipment and then just started, emailing some traders. So
I got to ask, and I'm such an old fuddy-duddy here, why podcasts as a medium, not to challenge you, but like in such a visual profession, so many charts, to do a podcast seems almost backwards, but you've had such great success. I mean, it's definitely quality of the people you brought on. I'm kidding. as well as the quality of the interviews, man. I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to who have, and so I will, on behalf of all listeners, thank you for what you're doing and for putting it out there, man. I hope you know that. And probably not the only time I'm going to thank you on this, man, on behalf of everybody. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it was something that kind of did run through my mind. Mm-hmm. It did run through my mind when I was initially, you know, sort of scheming. But, I mean, podcasts, you can listen to it anywhere. You know what I mean? Where a video, you've got to be sitting down and it takes your attention. You know what I mean? Like you can't be, I mean, a lot of people listen to podcasts at the gym, driving to work, I don't know, a bunch of different places. Whereas if you're watching a video, you can't really be doing anything else.
And right. I know, so accessible.
Yeah. So yeah, accessible. That's a great word. It was, yeah, the video, and I mean, I didn't, what was I going to put on the video? I mean, I'd have to ask the guests to sort of share their screen kind of thing. And I mean, a lot of it, when we talk about setups and that kind of thing, would be nice if we could have some visuals. And that's maybe something I'll consider, you know, sort of further down the track, is how we can maybe sort of work that in. But like for the part where they're sort of discussing their journey and that sort of thing, like we can get away with it on a podcast, I feel. So
I love that you can hear so much emotion and experience and sometimes burden in traders' voices. You know what I mean? I'm talking to a trader and you feel like you're talking, you know, somebody with a 1,000-yard stare. And I know you're really good at this. You pick up on the words that people choose to describe certain topics. I just know you're really good at pulling the quotes from each of the article interview or the interviews. It's always impressed me when it was after my interview or something, and I was like, I said that? And I was like, man, Aaron is smart. He's paying attention to me more than I'm paying attention to me. But it makes it really cool to read through some of the interviews and find those quotes and hear you know, the interviewee say it. So definitely, I mean, I can appreciate the audio is really the most important part of connecting. And putting a voice, you know, a persona to a name or some charts, it's all very dry and distant, and the voice is so, you know, personal and connecting.
Yeah, and I mean, podcasting, it's just so much more engaging than reading a blog article, right? So, I mean, I could interview someone by email. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I could just turn that into a blog post, like a written blog post. It's not that you know, I'm sure it would be a good read still, but
you can post it on your GeoCities page back in 1999.
I can't say I know what that is, but
wow. Okay, the age disparity is real. How old are you, Aaron? I don't know if you've ever mentioned this on the podcast.
I'm 24, so
God, geez, 25 kids these days, man.
25 in December. Where'd that come from? 25 in September.
You need to review your notes about your birthday. I'm just.
Oh, I try to forget it. I try to forget it. To be honest,
it's all good, dude. I know people are probably impressed and a bit daunted listening to you. When I first met you, I was like, man, this guy's gonna be in his 30s. Oh, he's 5 years younger than me. Great. You know,
I've got, you know, some guys listening, you know, 19, 20, 21, like I was emailing a guy last night who's been listening to the podcast and reached out, and he was only 21. And I was like, you know, well done, man. Like it's a great age to get into it. Yeah.
Do you remember the, not to put you on the spot here, but the email that you got from the father-son duo who had listened to your podcast while driving cross-country?
Yeah, yeah, that was really cool one to receive. Actually, I wish I could give them a shout out so I could mention their name. But yeah, father and son dropped me a line to mention that they'd been on a road trip across the state somewhere. I can't remember where it was, but they were on a road trip. It was about 10 hours, and they smashed out about 10 episodes of the podcast. So I was like,
wow,
congrats for putting up with me for that long.
Well, and having something cool to discuss and kind of bond over. I just think it's neat that you're giving people experiences like far beyond probably what you expected when you started this. And this is another thing. Sorry, I'm you know, giving you a bunch of praise here. But, man, you started this in January of 2015. What? You know what I mean? I don't know how else to say it other than I'm brutally impressed, man. You've had a tremendous following, and it's cool to see it grow, and I'm thrilled to hear from people. Still to this day, 3 months after my interview, I'm sure you hear from every single day who have found some value in this. So,
yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I definitely like to connect with anyone listening. So, I mean, I'll just mention it right now.
Be careful what you ask for, my friend. I learned from being on episode 11 where I offered a free consult, and in the best of ways, I was overwhelmed, but it's cool to see such a response. There's no other way to put it, and I know you're genuine in offering to reach out to people or have people reach out to you.
Yeah, so I mean, if anyone wants to drop me a line at any point, just shoot me an email. My email address is just aaron@chatwithtraders.com. Otherwise, just hit me up on Twitter @chatwithtraders. But yeah, that's a bit of a side note. So where were we?
So I was going to ask you actually about swing trading versus day trading, because when I first met you, you know, so many months ago, I'm kidding, back in January, you were predominantly a swing trader, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I've always swing traded since I very first started reading up and learning about how to trade, how to become a trader. Swing trading was just sort of, again, it was just the first thing that I was introduced to, and I just sort of stuck with it. I always knew about day trading, but I never attempted it or bothered to read up on it, because all the material that I had on GAN, and I don't mean to keep bringing up GAN, but it was all swing trading. It was all swing trading. And so it could be anywhere from holding a position to, you know, a couple of days to potentially a couple of weeks. And I kind of liked that. I kind of liked that approach because, I mean, you know, like a lot of swing traders, I had a job. You know, I was working. I used to do shift work a little bit, but for the most part, I was, you know, working during the day, so I couldn't really watch the market too closely during the day. Yeah, so with my swing trading, once I sort of started to move away from GAN, like I mentioned, I took some aspects that I really liked from his methods, and just some other things that I'd observed, just some particular setups, and I just tried to refine those a little bit and just get a bit more specific on what I was actually trading, because with his approach, there's a lot of variables and a lot of different things to take into consideration. I tried to sort of almost dumb it down a little bit and just try and set myself some rules, create like a bit of a trading plan, and say I trade this setup, and this setup looks like, you know, A, B, C, D.
And I realize how smart that is, that you're going through the boot camp before going to war. I think we were joking about this before. Like, most people go to war, get shot a bunch, come back, try and take boot camp, aren't really motivated to go through. It's such a backwards process, and it's so refreshing to hear somebody, especially as a novice in the stock market, so to speak, who's that diligent and disciplined. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that this approach led me to huge success, because it hasn't yet, but it was just an approach that made sense to me at the time I was doing it. So I did that, and I would take these trades, you know, as they came up, as I saw them. As I saw them setting up, I'd, you know, take these trades, I'd trade them with a live account. You know, a lot of them would lose. Occasionally I'd get a winning trade. And I'd sort of go back over them, I'd try and see what the differences were, you know, just that usual sort of thing. and try and refine my rules a little bit. But this particular setup, so my swing trading setup, so I try to narrow it down, dumb it down, like I said, and just focus on, you know, one particular setup which had a couple variables. And this setup sort of didn't come around too often. Like, it wouldn't be strange for me to be out of the market for a couple weeks at a time. And I sort of had the idea that if I want to excel my learning curve, then I need to be get more screen time in. And I need to be, you know, sitting out of the market for 3 weeks while I'm still checking it each day, you know, end of day. It's not very exciting. And I feel like it's slowing down my learning process. So that was about the time when you know, we were introduced by Peter Zhang. And you sort of introduced me to VWAP and the VWAP sort of the strategy that you were trading and those sorts of methods. So that kind of led me into intraday trading to kind of fill that gap of having periods where I was out of the market for a few weeks at a time waiting for a setup to come around.
So that was a great pun with gap, by the way. I have to comment on that. I'm just kidding. You notice also what you're identifying, I just want to point this out, is that you needed more quick response time in your signals. You needed to know if you were right or wrong more than once every 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Like I said, it's just like dragging out that learning process too much. Like, I feel like I've, you know, already been doing this for a few years. Let's try and speed things up a bit.
If you're not careful, you're going to be my age, man. You're going to be an old fart at 29. So I'm just kidding.
Yeah, better watch out.
So this is when we started talking. We were speaking more intraday, and this gets you into a bit of quantitative trading, although we're both a bit nascent quantitative traders, right?
Yeah, so this is probably going to lead me on a bit of a tangent here, and I'm not saying that it's right. I'm just saying this is kind of where I'm at in my head right now. And I mean, the more I learn, the more I'm starting to see things like this.
Sure.
So let's say you've got a particular setup or you've got a strategy. Okay. So you can look at a chart and you can say, this is where I would have entered. This is where I would have exited. And that would have been a winning trade, right? Following the rules that you've mentioned and your trading plan and your setup, that would have resulted in a winning trade right there. But if you were to take that same strategy and that same setup and look at 100 other charts, you're going to see that strategy and that signal, whatever you want to call it, where it's triggered and it would have resulted in a losing trade. So how do you know if there's a genuine edge to that setup if you don't have numbers to put to it? So you don't know how many times that setup is expected to result in a profit, how many times that setup is expected to result in a loss. You have no idea. You know that sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But I'm just very unclear on how you know if there's an edge in that setup. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? I don't know if I explained that very well.
No, I know what you mean. Most traders exist in this state of unknowing. And so it's a common place of, I've seen great examples of success on the charts in front of me. I've also seen terrible failures. I kind of believe that I'm going to intrinsically find more successes than failures. But if I don't really know with what likelihood I'm going to find a winner or a loser, I can't really calculate a viable risk reward that'll generate profit consistently for me. That state of unknowing is what keeps people from being quantitative traders. They're afraid of, what if I'm wrong? What if I find out I have no edge? But I'd always ask, what if you find out you do have an edge? This is we talked about this before, the inescapable truth of quantitative trading. You have to know one way or another. If you have an edge, you deserve to be trading with that confidence. And if you don't have an edge, you have to know that right now. You have to find that out as soon as possible to avoid future losses.
Yeah, so that particular, swing trade setup that I kind of mentioned before, that I'd focused in on and just trained that particular setup with a couple variations. Like, I knew that sometimes resulted in a very nice winning trade, and I knew it also resulted in losses, you know, sometimes. So,
sure.
I didn't know. Without knowing, if I was to trade that 100 times, where I would stand at the end of that 100 trades, I don't know if I'd be up or down. You know
what
I mean?
It's like you're talking about the difference between belief and knowledge. When you believe that something is going to be good, that's fine, right? But if you know it's going to be good, I mean, it's a very different. You operate from a different point of confidence and clarity. You kind of remove the emotion when it's not you're hoping for this to work out because you don't know, but rather you've already asked and answered those questions.
Yeah, so this kind of led me into wanting to learn how to code and kind of led me in that sort of quantitative direction of trading. So, I mean, still in the very, very early stages of that. And I mean, you know, you were partly responsible for sort of leading me into in that direction, just to a certain extent. With
I'll take the credit or the blame, whatever it ends up being.
Like, you sort of introduced me to ThinkScript at least, and we sort of started going through some ThinkScript documentation. I started reading up on the ThinkScript manual on the website.
In just a little context for people who may not know, ThinkScript is a JavaScript derivative used by TD Ameritrade's Thinkorswim. The reason why I thought this would be a good starting point for someone like Aaron is it's free, it's pretty accessible, it's well documented, and I happen to know it inside and out. So I felt like it was a good starting point for us. But I got to be honest, Aaron, I've never seen anybody take to code like you have. And I know you're going to be humble and say, well, I'm still working on it, but I've been very impressed. I gave you the assignment, quote unquote, of looking at the manual. 3 days later, you come back and you're like, yeah, take a look at this script. And I'm just, my God.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's partly because I come from having the knowledge in web design. So, I mean, I know a little bit of CSS. I know some basic HTML. But, I mean, I know you don't build an algorithm out of CSS, but it's sort of, I'm not completely code illiterate, if that makes sense. So, I mean, I've got a little bit of an understanding on how you might kind of put something together. Even though when we start dealing with languages like ThinkScript, and I've more recently started getting into Python, which is pretty exciting, well, for me anyway, it's a very, very steep learning curve. But I think that's having that sort of web design background, I don't know that's a huge benefit, but it just sort of made me think that, you know.
Well, it sounds like organizationally that would benefit anybody, just to have considered, well, what components am I going to need to build a web page? And I don't know if you can code an algo in CSS, but if you did, it'd be a beautiful and well-organized cascading algorithm. No, I'm just kidding. I'm certain that helped you. Having a predilection or predisposition is really the right word to code. You've seen it before. You've experienced it before. You've had errors before. Things haven't displayed properly, and you've had to debug them. So it's like you're talking about the logic of any code, as well as a little bit of syntax. And I've noticed the same thing with CSS. There's a lot of parallels between that and JavaScript, which probably led you to your early development in ThinkScript and now moving, like you said, more towards Python.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, something that I haven't really, you know, obviously we speak quite often, but I haven't really spoken to you too much about this topic, and that is how I have been getting quite deep into Python, or starting trying to learn it, you know, putting a lot of time into it. And I've sort of set a goal for myself to have, I know it's a little bit vague right now, but to have some sort of automated trading signal or setup that is automated in roughly about 6 months. So sort of by the end of the year, I'm hoping that I can be somewhere close to having an automated trading signal. And that signal would look something like this. It would be a swing trade set up, so it'd be based off technical analysis and certain, like, you know, chart patterns. It would probably hold trades for, you know, a couple days to maybe a week or two, and it would run through Interactive Brokers. So that's kind of how I picture it.
And anybody who's thinking out there, man, 6 months to go fully automated, I think you have to consider how smart Aaron's being about the finite or like discrete kind of, not to say simple, but the straightforward nature of what you might define as an automated system. It just has to be something that you trust the output of because you've tested it. It doesn't have to be a 20-component intermarket analysis signal. It can be buying a moving average crossover near the 200 moving average, or whatever you want. It can be something very straightforward. So I think it's good on you to keep it limited and gives you an attainable goal, especially early on. You can always expand from there. Yeah.
So something I probably wanted to ask you was setting myself a goal of trying to achieve that in 6 months. I don't know if that's a little bit naive, considering I've never gone through this process of identifying a signal, testing it, and, you know, going through the different processes of taking that trade to a level where it's then automated, plugged into your broker. Is 6 months, is that a little bit ambitious, or like how achievable do you think that is?
Well, okay, so we have to examine this at the time frame that you're trying to trade. So given it's a swing system, I think that's smart. It's kind of the Goldilocks approach. If you're trying to trade on the shortest of terms, you know, an automated day trading system, you got to consider execution routes, market impact, slippage, commissions, all these things, because you're in a frequently trading system. And that's not even HFT. I'm just talking about an automated intraday system. Mm-hmm. On the other end of the spectrum, if you're a portfolio manager, you have all sorts of other considerations, fundamentals, intermarket moves, as I was kind of joking about before. I think you're doing it right by approaching it from the most accessible point. You're kind of trying to establish a beachhead of what if I did have a signal that I had vetted, I had evaluated, I had tracked for months, and I understood intimately. I'd feel comfortable deploying that, you know, automatically. That's smart, and it's definitely doable within 6 months. I think if you'd go to portfolio management, that's a million other problems you haven't even considered yet. Intraday trading, another million problems in a different direction. So you're riding the knife's edge of potential here, Aaron, not to make it sound dire, but I think it's very doable. And also given your coding background, and you seem to have found a good few dozen expert traders to talk to. One or two of them may know a thing or two about code you could talk to. I'm pretty sure you're gonna bang this out. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, that's sort of why I've been leaning towards Python. Obviously, living outside of the States, I can't fund an account with Thinkorswim, and I believe Thinkorswim do have the capacity to deal with automation. Is that correct?
They do, but here I'll show my true colors. I promise, guys, I'm not a Thinkorswim shill. They are pretty expensive. And so if you're talking automated trading, the biggest worry for me is that you would have 20 trades a day and commissions would eat your lunch. So it's smart of you to probably work with something a little lower commission and a little more flexible that has a good API like Interactive Brokers. I've heard pretty much nothing but good things about them. I actually spoke to other traders in the past few days who've been working on the IB API, and they had good things to say about it too. So you notice what you're doing is you're trying to do this efficiently. You're not devoting your entire life, you know, 20 hours a day and barely sleeping to learning Python. But similarly, you're not so far removed from it that you're not going to get anywhere. I think you're setting attainable goals for yourself. And look at how this parallels a trader's like profit and loss development. When you set unattainable goals, can you blame yourself for failing? Not really. You can blame yourself for setting shitty goals. So similarly, by saying I'm not trying to develop the next HFT and I'm not going to build a massive portfolio system, I'm going to backtest a signal. I'm going to evaluate and vet and then approve the signal. And then I'm going to start it and we'll see where it goes. That could be trading once a week. It could be trading a couple times a week. It depends on how selective you are. But I think you're being reasonable about it. So if nothing else, maybe talking to 25 veterans of the market has aged you a bit and scared you. You're keeping it real, which is smart. So
yeah. So I mean, I'm pretty excited. I mean, learning Python and this sort of quantitative approach, I find it fascinating. It's really interesting to me. So,
let's go back to the thing we were saying before about you have to know one way or another. There's that great Mike Belfiore quote that you were telling me before. Do you remember it?
Yeah. So when I interviewed Mike, and I was thrilled to get the opportunity to speak with him, Mike Belfiore, he mentioned a quote which really stuck with me. And that was a lot of traders confuse psychology with a lack of edge. So I'll repeat that. A lot of traders confuse psychology with a lack of edge. And I mean, that just really stuck with me. And I mean, that sort of came back to that point, which I tried to explain earlier. I don't know how clear I was, but like, how do you know if you have an edge?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you can't put any numbers to what you can expect from trading a particular setup, then how do you know if there's a genuine edge to be had in that? And I mean, I'm not saying that you can't make money as a discretionary trader at all. Definitely not saying that. I'm just saying this is like sort of the train of thought that I have right now.
It feels like it's more personally exacting. You have to be right. You have to be precise. And I think we were joking about this before. It's like the idea of a tongue twister, right? Humans are not good at being precise and doing these repetitive tasks always. And it's asking too much of us to be 100% right or to be 100%, you know, buying the low, selling the top. I think it's very smart to adopt the quantitative approach. You're right. But definitely, we both know many successful discretionary traders. So who are we to judge, right?
Totally. Absolutely. So, yeah. All right. Well, let's keep this moving.
Sure. So it's funny because the next topic I had for you was just tied to the Mike Belfiore quote. What are some other maybe quotes or episodes that have stuck with you? This is something I've always wanted to know your view on. What are some episodes that you think people should go and listen to that maybe they may not have caught the first time?
Yeah, so probably a couple of the interviews, which I feel probably deserve a little bit more attention than maybe what they did receive, would maybe be Tim Walker's interview. So I spoke with him on episode 6. And funny enough, that was actually the very first interview I ever recorded. So from my side, it's a little bit sketchy, but Tim definitely delivers some great insights. And he is a GAN trader, but even if you're not interested in that type of thing, I think it's still well worth a listen because the majority of the interview is based on just sort of general trading foundations. It's really good one to check out. So, and then probably the other one is more recent, and I'm not being biased because I know this is David Bush who mentored you as you were coming up.
Sure.
So his interview I found really, really interesting, especially like a lot of his answers were almost kind of inspiring from how he's come from sort of like a musician background. He's been a discretionary trader for many years. And then he's gradually taught himself to creating what he described as like a meta system, where he's got like up to 30 to 50 sort of different strategies all sort of tied into one, and how he now uses that to just sort of views trading in a totally different way. So he now like oversees trades instead of jumping on a trade and hoping that's going to result in a profit. He doesn't really care if there's a few losers, just as long as the overall result is positive.
That's that really smart, like, quantitative trader distance that an algo trader will try and adopt of, this doesn't reflect poorly on me if a trade doesn't work. I'm in charge of overseeing all these things. It's like being a manager. Mm. You feel bad if one of your employees has to get fired? Like, yeah, look, that's unpleasant, but it's not your fault, most likely, right? It just didn't work out with the employee. And very similarly, having that oversight or overseeing. I've always loved about Dave that he was really articulate. Like, you're right about the answers being almost inspiring. I think about, like, I could take a year to write a white paper that wouldn't sound as good as the stuff he says off the cuff half the time. But, You've had so many great traders on what can I say? I definitely liked Tim Walker as well, episode 6, and of course Dave, episode 23. So
yeah, so those would probably be like the two interviews which I think everyone should probably listen to. I mean, I'm probably saying Dave a little bit more so because he's definitely in that quantitative space, which has really grabbed me right now. So
sure,
I mean that's another reason why I found that really fascinating. But yeah, definitely Dave's interview. And Tim Walker's, and I mean, I don't want to try and like single out those two and say they were the best, but like, yeah, I mean, everyone is like given incredible answers, so I'm really grateful for everyone who's, you know, given up their time and been open for an interview, because everyone's been really honest with their answers, so no one's really shied away from anything and try to, you know, squirm their way out of it. It's been really good.
And credit to you for being humble, so I'll brag on your behalf, but the ebook as well that you recently put out, I'm obviously honored to be in that as well, but some great responses from the other traders. I loved getting to go through and see what other people would have said. It's just such a down-to-earth kind of like, what if you could go back 5 years in time and speak to yourself? Well, you wish you could have told her, you know, not 5 years necessarily, maybe many, many more years if you're a more experienced trader, but just it's cool to hear, I say this, the insight you would have given to yourself, you know, or you would have given to others, or you could give to others right now.
Yeah, so. It's like that one lesson that you wish someone would have told you. I mean, that's what the book's called. So if anyone's listening and they haven't had a chance to check that out, just go to, I can't remember the direct link to it, but if you just go to chatwithtraders.com, you'll see ebook as a link in the top menu. So you can go there, check that out, and download that. It's free to download. And this brings us to a good point. So you had a piece in that book, Zach, and that was, the one thing that you wish someone would have told you when you were sort of starting out. And that was, you mentioned you wish someone would have said that you need to disassociate yourself from the identity, the image, and the persona of being a trader. So what exactly does this mean to you? Like, and why is that important?
I just think that so many traders are in this game to tell other people that they're traders. I think so much of it is the, I want to say like badge of courage, like, you know, it's the thing we wear, the chip, there we go, the chip of courage that we wear on our shoulders, you know what I'm saying? We've got a chip on our shoulder. Like, it's the ego and mentality of, I don't want to say machismo, because I've seen it in female traders too, but this kind of uber over-competitiveness, feeling that they need to prove it to everyone around them. The truth is that nobody really cares and nobody values it that highly anyway. Most people don't understand what you do. They don't care what you do. They think you're a gambler in any case. It's up to you to prove them wrong. Not prove them wrong like by talking a big game. It's not by prove them wrong by having enough monitors, although I'll be honest, I'm pretty guilty of that. I've got 5 sitting in front of me here. But, you know, it's the trappings and kind of fluff, I think I called it, that we tell ourselves when we don't have an edge about, you know, I'm going to be something one day. I'm so close. I hear that all the time from my trading students. I'm this close, Zach. I just got to get, you know, the next. And everybody is that close to something in their life. Go ahead.
Yeah, so let me just cut in there. And
yeah,
for those who do feel like they're so close but just not quite there, I mean, I felt like that for quite a while. I mean, I'm still not there, but mm-hmm. Now I've realized that I am quite a way away. But, like, why do they feel like they're so close but just not quite there? Like, something's just not clicking yet. Like, what's the reason for that? Like, why do they feel that way?
Yeah, you know, we were talking about it before with the kind of, I can observe a single chart that works. I will never know about the 99 others that don't. Traders are not pretty honest with themselves about tracking a system or strategy. Cherry picking is prevalent. Curve fitting is throughout this industry, especially at the retail level, because you get guys who are not knowledgeable enough to backtest or to do an appropriate or robust backtest. They just find anecdotal evidence. And I think I'd said something on my podcast about intuitive, anecdotal, and mathematical. Like, you got to have all three. It can't just be I've seen this happen before, and therefore it is a rule, and this is my strategy, and I will continue to find great charts like this. You know, you may have found the, the far right edge of the distribution, let's say. You may have found the best trade, and you're holding that as the kind of most frequent occurrence in the data set. I don't think people have a lot of perspective on how far they might be. And so maybe this is something that I would credit you with. You are humble and self-aware in that by talking to many other expert traders, you realize, like, my God, these guys are still struggling through it and developing, and they're 20, 25 years into this business. I'm 5 years into this business. How much more development must I have ahead of me? And so you've been humbled without having to pay the tuition. Does that make sense? You've not blown up an account, but you've learned from many others who have. I don't think a lot of traders are aware of the misfortunes of others around them. They're not realistic about how 80% of traders are gone every year. They just stop trading, and a new 80%. I'm definitely kind of incorrect in these statistics, but you see what I'm saying about there's a high turnover rate in this profession. I don't know.
No doubt. I mean, that kind of reminds me of something Adam Grimes mentioned when I interviewed him on. What was that? That was episode 21.
And yeah, I forgot. Like, he was another great interview too.
Yeah, no doubt. He was like, you never arrive as a trader. Like, you don't reach a level and you're like, okay, I'm now a trader. I've made it. You're like, he's like, you just become a trader. You just always, I'm not explaining this very well. We're doing justice.
No. But this ties into what we were saying earlier with the pendulum of development. That it's a never-ceasing swinging of the pendulum. You don't just develop for a year and then go be a trader. You develop, you trade. You develop, you trade. You develop, you trade. And eventually you're 90 years old and you're a multi-billionaire and you stop trading. I mean, that's the plan, right?
That would be the ultimate.
6 months from now, an automated strategy. 20 years from now, the world. I think... I don't know. It ties in perfectly, I think, with what we're saying about that it's a continual process. And the people who – maybe that's why people feel they're so close. And think about that. That's actually really funny that it ties in. When you think there's a destination in mind, you're always so close. Just one more day of travel. Just one more hour. Just one more mile. But what if it was about the journey? What if it really was just about driving? You never would focus on how close or how far you were. You're just driving.
Yeah.
You see where I'm kind of going with this? For the sake of the drive. I don't mean to get too cheesy and philosophical. I know we're all here for the money too, but and this speaks to why traders often don't get where they're trying to go. The market, and this is a Denise Schull, I believe, quote, about the market as a mirror. It represents whatever you need it to represent. For many of us, it's the thing ever out of our reach. We're never going to master all of the market. We're never going to nail it down. But the challenge, the chase, the puzzle, the struggle, it's all part of some self-betterment process that often parallels what's going on in your life. And actually, we've talked about this on the pre-call too, life and work balance, finding time to be a trader, but also finding time to be a human being outside of trading. I've definitely spent many a month or a week, you know, zoned in on this and could have done better on the life balance side. So I'll admit to that.
Yeah, it's very easy to do that. It's I think we're all guilty of that to a
certain
extent.
It wasn't so damn exciting. And then we'd give up on it after a while and go do something normal. But it's you know what I'm saying about the ever further away, you know, goal. It's kind of inspiring in a way. It's something to chase after.
Yeah, you know, totally. Well, I mean, we've been chatting for about an hour or so now, so I mean, we should probably start to wrap this up. But are there any sort of is there anything I've maybe missed or anything you'd like to add to the conversation and maybe some topics we might have skipped over?
Well, you remember we came up with that really funny kind of four-stage development of the trader. Guys, before we were on this call, Aaron and I were talking a little bit about how traders develop and the commonality of their development and how some traders do things very differently. But I don't mean to put words in your mouth, Aaron. I'll take, like I said, credit or blame for this quote. But go ahead.
Yeah, so you were mentioning that, like, a lot of traders, they start out and they – they make money.
And they have no idea why.
Yeah, and then they lose money and they still don't know why.
Yeah.
And then they're still losing money, but they know why. They realize why.
Yeah, they
why.
Have some idea of what's going on.
And then eventually start making money and know the reasons for it. So it's kind of like those four stages kind of thing. So do you want to just sort of elaborate on that a little bit further?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just think it's funny the, like, parallelism of the construction of that phrasing. Like, you make money, but don't know why. You lose money, but don't know why. You lose money, but kind of figure out why. And eventually, maybe you make money and know why. Stage two is the elephant graveyard of traders. That is where so many careers have ended, in the losing money and not knowing why. I know that's not groundbreaking. I think many people find themselves at that point right now, probably. I hope you're inspired to recognize that, like, it's minimizing the money lost relative to the amount of experience gained. And so this is kind of like another traderism of, you'll always pay the tuition, but will you attend the class? Do you see what I'm saying? Like, everybody's going to lose some money. It might take you $5, $500, $5,000, $500,000 to learn the lessons of the market. And everybody's moving at a different speed. I mean, this is like what we were saying about the paralleling of life development, too. Everybody is progressing through life at a different speed, and that's okay. It's the people who pay attention and try and learn these lessons early. So, after this interview, I'm going to go hop in a time capsule, go back 5 years in time, and read that entire ebook to myself. and then I'll call you from my yacht in the future, because, you know, I'll be a millionaire at that point. So.
If only.
Right. I'm sure we'll expound more on that in the future. I think that's a great topic. Like, the path of a trader. What is common? What is typical? What should people pay attention to? You know, so often it's like we learn these things after the fact because that's when we build the experience. Man, I'll throw in another thank you. You are doing a great service to the community of traders by putting other great traders and yourself now, finally, out there. As an example for others. I mean, it's just brilliant. And like I said, in I think a Twitter message or retweet, where were you 5 years ago? Where were you when I was learning how to trade? Like, why didn't I have this? It would have been phenomenal. So, Aaron, sincerely, man, on behalf of everybody, thank you so much. And thanks for coming on your own broadcast. And it was a pleasure to have you on your broadcast. And sincerely, man, it was good fun. And looking forward to continuing conversations and that auto strategy in 6 months' time.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll have to keep everyone updated on now that I've put it out there. I can't go back on it now, so better knuckle down. But thanks so much for doing this, Zach. It was really good to sort of get you to come in and kind of take my seat and swap sides for this episode. So we sort of changed it up a little bit. But
Swap sides of the earth. When you said change seats, I was thinking, man, it's going to take me 25 hours to get there.
Well,
we are on diametrically opposite sides of this planet, guys. I'm in Cincinnati, Ohio, and Aaron is in Brisbane, Australia.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, well, that's a really good point. So if anyone wants to get in touch with you, Zach, how's the best way to do that?
Yeah, sure. You can shoot me an email at tradingcoachz or tradingcoachz for those of you in the States. That's tradingcoachz @gmail.com. Or you can always hit me up on Twitter at Zach Hurwitz.
All right. Good one. And if anyone wants to get in touch with me for any reason, more than happy to speak with anyone. I mean, that was partly my reason for starting this podcast, like I mentioned right at the start, that I'm keen to connect with other traders and, just build a bit of a community and, bounce ideas off each other and just kind of help each other out. So, I mean, my email address is aaron@chatwithtraders.com and my Twitter handle is @chatwithtraders. So you can catch me on either one of those. And, I will we'll have to do this again sometime, Zach, and, drill down on things a little bit more.
I think 6 months and one day from now, we're going to have another interview. No, I'm kidding. Don't anyone mark that in your calendars. I'm just giving you a hard time, Aaron. Thank you so much for having me on, man. It's always a pleasure, and anytime.
No trouble. All right, guys, take care, and take care, Zach. We'll speak to you soon.
You've come to the end of this episode of Chat with Traders, but don't worry, more great episodes are on the way. To stay updated with each great new episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, and we'd love it if you leave us a rating and review. We'll see you next time on Chat with Traders.